Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
By the way, I'm just reading from, is this Axios or Politico, this rundown? Politico says, the big question will be, among other things, who will be the headline performer? The buzz is it's a boss performer. A boss is in italics there, as though it's a play on words. But Bruce Springsteen doesn't have anything to do with Chicago. I'm thinking maybe a Springsteen cover band.
Chance the Rapper?
Yeah, right. Who is it that, who would be the, you know, who's our Dan Fogelberg now? Who is that performer that we say,
there's only one Dan Fogelberg?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Tim Clue's also in our studio. Who would be, you know, it's not Kanye. It's not going to be, maybe Chance is 20 minutes ago.
This is the Marine Color Guard, I believe, or Illinois National Guard.
Is this live in the background
right now? Yes.
Maybe it's
from
the Fighting Illini Marching Band. I don't know. And we'll find out. Lots of pomp and circumstance going on there. And what does JB have to say about the state of Illinois State? We'll get to that at the top of the hour. It'll sort of truncate our Wintrust business lunch. So you just heard the squeaking of Tim Clue, the comedian, playwright, and motivational speaker in the field of education in our studio.
Oh, boy, that sounds above my pay grade, but okay.
Well, you wrote it.
I guess I did.
Tim and I go way back, and many of you have heard his voice on Chicago radio for a very long time, but you and I go back to Peoria, Illinois.
Isn't that the truth? Is that the sad truth or just the truth?
It's a beautiful thing.
It is.
I was a talk show host in Peoria. You were a student at Bradley.
Yes.
You were on the forensics team there.
The speech and improv team thing.
That won national awards year in and year out while you were there.
And you brought us in. And we had our first actual radio interview, 20, 30 years ago?
However long it was ago that you were a junior in college and a senior in college.
Roosevelt was president, Kerry the one, that kind of thing. It was that long ago.
So you guys won what would have been the equivalent of the NCAA tournament and the NIT tournament, the two major speech tournaments held with all the big schools.
You really are amazing, John. The fact that you can remember that is just stunning to me.
I have forgotten...
my own history. So
the success of the Bradley speech program, which is, Bradley's a good school for a lot of things. Engineering,
yeah, absolutely.
And the speech leads there are terrific. But I was so impressed with the talent that they would bring into our studio. So you were one of these young up-and-coming smart Alex.
Yeah.
And we would have you debate spontaneously. We'd give you a topic.
Yes.
And then
more
you'd also do your shtick.
Yes, exactly.
You went on to a career in education.
Education. I taught for 10 years, and I did comedy for 25. I still do comedy when they'll have me, you know, when they'll have me.
And then you got into this motivational speaking to teachers.
It's funny. Someone just asked me to, I'd been entertaining corporations, and that can be a bit of a soulless endeavor. Describe the
typical corporate shindig.
I would be speaking to retired actuaries and accountants, and at the high point of the show, they'd be staring at me and coughing together. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's typical.
They'd have their convention and dinner, and then they say, now here's Tim Clue, and you'd walk out and say, hey, everybody.
It paid the bills. Sometimes they can be over the top fun and rewarding, but sometimes you're really not moving the needle on society. Let me just tell you that you're there as a fluffer.
Yeah. Well, sometimes we need a little fluff. I think that's a beautiful thing.
Corporate fluffer.
So then,
but no, I stumbled into someone asked me to actually just speak to a bunch of teachers, and because I am a left-handed dyslexic Budiansky rug rat, and kind of became everything that I've ever done in the classroom came from the teacher I never had. And
What does that mean?
Well, it means that there was a void and that kids like me were falling through the cracks because we were bouncing around, bouncing off the walls.
Did you get good grades in school?
No, horrible
you
grades.
You were not a successful academic
What
experience?
Part of left-handed dyslexic rugrat are you missing, John?
So that was you. And but are you mad at the teachers who didn't?
Oh, I'm very mad. I'm angry. I'm furious. No, of course not. No, I had many mentors, curious curators, and coaches, and
obviously you were a bright kid and a funny kid.
Yeah, but there are many kids like me out there that live in two different worlds. A world in which you feel that you're pretty capable, pretty bright, and a world in which the thing that you're in is showing you the exact opposite.
Right, right.
And that's one of the things, one of the things I try to nudge forward when I go present and we experience together, hopefully, a classroom that's connected as opposed to disconnected.
It is interesting, isn't it? It may be sad, right, that we score kids, we grade them.
Well, that's it. I mean, we're more focused on evaluating separating than we are collaborating.
And nurturing, maybe.
And nurturing and creating an environment where a kid can find a place to fit and not quit.
So that you run. Did fit, you didn't quit, so you're out there talking to teachers. What do you tell them?
Well, you know, and I tell a story about a teacher that put me inside a refrigerator box in fourth grade, you know, and you can't do that now because you probably, you know.
You're not supposed to do that.
You can't duct tape them anymore. And you can't put them in refrigerator
boxes.
I'm
a lot older than you, and there are things that we all endured. I mean, talk to anybody that went to a Catholic school.
Right.
Or is going there now.
Right.
It's just, it was a different world and perhaps not a better one for it.
But in that situation, here I am receiving my homework from above, like you just throw the homework, in the top of the box that surrounded my desk because it was so disruptive, which I was. I deserve to be in that.
Wait,
box.
Is this the refrigerator box story still?
Yeah, we're still there.
Okay, so tell me that story.
Over a period of time, I was in there for 8 weeks.
Wait a minute, in a refrigerator box?
In a refrigerator box.
That like was, she cordoned you off from the class?
Yes, exactly. So I could still be in the class. Hearing what was going on, but I couldn't see, and they couldn't see me, because I would obviously...
You were disruptive.
I was a little disruptive. I would try to, work on the early stand-up routine, right?
Really?
Exactly.
Really?
Yeah, you can't imagine that happening.
Was that a practical solution for her?
Well, believe it or not, I was in fourth grade reading at a first grade level. I could only read peanut books at the time, because they were simple, and the words were big enough for me to read, and then... by the end of the year, I was reading at a fourth and fifth grade level. And we talk a lot about the need for, outside the box thinking, but that was some pretty That was some good inside the box thinking. But what happened was, in truth, to get a little, serious here, every child, you hear this word IEP, individualized education plan. And the point is that every child deserves an individualized education plan. And what happened in that box was, My mind was given to me. I found a space and a place in which I could think. I asked to be put in the back hall closet if I was given a reading assignment or a complex math equation, because suddenly I realized that I needed a different way to think. Now, I eventually got out of the box. I put a slit with my pen. I would carve open a little slot. And
I hope it had air holes, too.
Yes, it did. Before. No, it, above. No, like I said, they received my homework from above.
Yes.
But I would put my tongue through the little mail slot slit and perform tongue puppetry.
Yeah, but I mean, so in a way, though, if you were isolated from the distractions of the traditional school environment, you could function, you could excel, it sounds like.
Yes.
And the teacher inadvertently discovered that.
Exactly. And I make a joke where I tell the teachers, I say, look, there are two basic reactions to the story. The first is, oh my goodness, what kind of teacher would ever put a kid in a refrigerator box? And the second reaction is, dang, I wish I could have taught during the 70s.
Yeah, I know. Where do I get a box?
Where do I get a box? Can I put them in a box and duct tape them? But we can't do that anymore, so we got to come up with more innovative
ways. I've watched
ways.
The video of you working at these conventions or assemblies, be 1,000 teachers in a theater, running around doing stuff with them. But do get serious for a minute. So what do you tell them? Or are you just motivating them to go be the best teacher? Or do you have strategies for them to be effective teachers?
Look, I mean, we had a Yop moment. And Yop moment is the Dr. Seuss moment where we find that there's a world inside that dust ball.
I don't know what that is.
It's a new Yop revelation. You ever read Horton Hears a Who?
Sure, but not recently.
Well, you need to bone up.
Yop.
Yop.
Y-A-P?
Which, Yop. Yeah, Y-O-P.
Yeah.
Pete, can you double check me on that? Is it Yop or Yap? I mean, can you do some research on that?
So there's a moment of revelation.
A moment of revelation. And we've had that with the workforce as it was shifted, you know, as it was shifted over remotely. And we've discovered that, guess what? You know, millions of people can now work from home effectively. The same thing is about to occur in education, but we're not there. And the biggest thing I'd like to tell every person out there, and you know, some people aren't going to be happy about this, is that the good news is we have fabulous educators, teachers, and leadership. That's what I've learned by traveling around the country and talking to these administrators and teachers, that the infrastructure of talent. What we have is, though, is a system that needs to be rethought and given more experiential. The teachers need to be thought of more as mentors and guides and coaches and less like people that are teaching kids how to regurgitate, reiterate, and recite.
Yeah, right. But are you asking the parents then to be more involved in the education? I mean, where do the kids get the basic fundamentals?
So, I mean, John, not to be too tricky here, but there's really wonderful stuff. I wish basically the way third graders teach their classroom and the way some of the special education teachers' classroom, we should keep that all the way through high school. What happens is over a period of time, they find that basically kids around fifth and sixth grade start to self-identify themselves as either a formidable student, someone that is smart and can handle the system, right?
Yeah.
Or they start to do the opposite.
Yeah.
And once a child gets into that space, like I did, I don't know if you had the same, the same experience, where you start to question fundamentally your ability to work within this structured system that's devised, like you said, to evaluate and compare you versus mentor and coach you. The minute you get stuck in that pothole, it's extremely difficult to get a child out of that space.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned. I was talking to a retired educator recently, and she said that when kids identify as failures in an academic setting, they go, well, I'm bad at school.
Yes.
That's me now.
Well, in school set up, and I actually wrote this note in here that I wanted you to remind me to say, not all, and most schools, otherwise your inbox is going to be furiously afire with, Nico Valla.
Not all, but most schools what?
Yeah, not all, but most schools are set up to help the already ready and steady 10 to 12%, 10 to 15% roughly, and they're not set up to help all minds of all kinds and thinkers that are very diverse that might not flourish in the way that it's currently structured.
And you're not talking special ed. You're not talking.
Mm-mm.
You're talking mainstream.
Yes.
Academic settings.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm there to help educators realize that there is no kid. There are just very few kids out there that cannot flourish if they are liked, if they are brought into the community, and if you find a vertical in that kid's mind. And what I mean by vertical, and that's a space where you can lift up a very specific thing that you identify as, hey, you're good at that. You're really good at that. Let me ask you, you went to school. Did you go to school?
Yes, I did.
You did? Do you remember the thing that you did best first, or the thing that you did worst first?
I remember the thing I did worse first.
Yeah. Do you think that's an experience that most people have?
It's an interesting point. It's 11:47. Tim Clue's in our studio, the comedian, the playwright, the motivational speaker in education these days. I saw a video of him running around at one of these events, making people laugh, making people love what they do if they didn't already.
Well, I'm trying to show them that a class should be an experience that you remember. You can't build leadership if you're standing up and talking down at kids. That's a contradiction.
You ask, and producer Pete Zimmerman provides. Here's what YOP means.
Very good. This is a callback, right? I just threw out the word yop without any context.
Well, you assumed that I knew what it meant, and I didn't. And you referenced that it's from Horton Hears a Who, and it's a sort of an epiphanous moment. And maybe not that. Here's what the definition is. Jojo may be a little guy, but his voice is the one that eventually saves the Who's. The lad cleared his throat and shouted out, yop. Jojo's shout represents even the littlest and smallest thing can make a big difference, even if you don't believe that it will.
Right.
And what's the reference to, how do you use that note?
Well, I mean,
that notion.
You know, that idea of dropping a pebble into the water and the waves make it all the way across.
Yeah, but what are you talking about? So the teacher needs to
be a guide, a coach,
a small
mentor?
Thing is
yes.
going to coach a kid.
Yes.
But in a classroom.
Let me just say this. It might not be the teacher. It might be the cafeteria worker.
Right.
It might be the bus driver.
Sure.
I'm very serious. Like, you know, the face of somebody else may be the one light that you needed to kick that door open. And I'm not trying to just be corny here. I'm serious that, you know.
I believe that, Tim, but it would seem to me like every teacher or bus driver wants to have a yop moment for a kid where they show them the vertical path that their life can take.
But it's difficult. It's difficult.
They got 30 kids in the classroom.
Exactly, and that is the problem.
What do you tell them?
Well, you tell the politician, you tell the parent, you tell the school board that if you got 30 kids in the classroom, that's structurally set up for failure. That's what you tell them.
Oh, really? You think that there's too many kids in the classrooms?
There's studies. I mean, this has been well boiled and oiled. The bottom line is you have 14 to 25 kids a teacher can succeed, especially they'll succeed better if they have an assistant and a helper in the classroom. The classroom will even flourish more. You'll create a team. You'll create a community. And anything over 25 is set up for failure only with maybe the most exceptional teacher capable. And I don't know why we do that. We have this incredible resource, and yet we don't really treat it with much respect.
You asked me if I remembered my first success or failure in school as a kid, and I said it was failure. I was in a slow class for readers.
Yeah, I mean, you were in the, just like me, you know, they gave you colors. Remember that?
Yeah.
And remember the
A and the B group.
Right. Well, remember the more dull colors, like like brown, burnt sienna, meant you were a slow reader, and the more vibrant colors. And that was to hide the fact that you weren't going to guess the fact that, you know, the kids over in the Indigo group were reading a little faster than you.
Well, I wonder how I got out of that group. There I was with the burnt siennas, and I eventually figured it out. I don't remember.
Orange.
Yeah, I don't remember if a teacher or somebody, you know, sort of lit the spark for me.
Right.
I think I was fortunate to. I was bright enough as it was, and my family was. I had a good family structure.
Exactly, and that's what we have a system set up, I think, for. I think a lot of kids get out because they're lucky, and I don't think that's the right way to set the system up.
Yeah, and so your message to the teachers then is to the degree, I'm guessing, that you can provide those
nurturing
moments.
Yes, I go from the general to, first off, I don't talk. I mean, what we're doing right now is actually frustrating to me because I try to demonstrate from the get-go what a connected classroom feels like, what a community feels like, because here's what we learn. John, ask some of your callers. Ask a parent out there to call in and ask their third grader how many kids in their classroom can they name? How many friends? Even my own daughter, she's a seventh grader,
and
she can name four. Four. That's ridiculous.
That's too few.
That's way too few. We have a system in which, you know, don't get me going, but I really believe if we spent more time building a community, we could reduce some of that social isolation, bullying, and even...
That's interesting.
Ye
that
shall
not be named.
The mistake
we're making is to teach to the test, then. We're so great.
Oh, of course,
we're
of so course. It's like, it's done. That's so old school, it shouldn't even be said. I mean, look, I actually do this little assignment where I do this thing where I call it the wrong is right answer, right? Where you have to build a culture where we're trying to build thinkers that it takes a lot of mediocre ideas to get to a good idea. The problem is, if you only want a child to come up with the right idea, well, that's paralysis analysis. That's not a way to build a thinker that's going to experiment, going to reinvent, going to, and I don't like this word, fail up, because no child really wants to fail. It's a bad bumper sticker, and it should be rethought, but that's a whole other conversation later down the road.
But allow them to get things wrong because that's a process.
Exactly, right? You know, I asked, give me the wrong answer to what is motivation.
What is motivation?
Give me the wrong answer.
The motivation is hitting people with a stick.
Thank you. Very good. Excellent. Very good. Took time to think about that. Now write a poem about that, right? And so on and so forth. The bottom line is you have to create a culture where mistakes and happy accidents and experiments can flourish. And
what's the response do you get from, I'm watching the clock here, we may get cut off at any minute for the governor's speech, but do teachers like this? Do they identify with this?
Well, there's a thud in the moment. Let me tell you, the most interesting moment, I have a little slide at the end where I ask every teacher, would you go back in time and take your class? Would you enjoy your class?
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say there's a quietness.
Maybe because they haven't thought about that before, for one thing.
Right.
Or maybe because they go, no, I'm yelling at the kids a lot, or I'm something.
Right. And that sometimes it's not even their fault. It's a structural situation set up where it's the only thing that they can do, or they feel it's the only thing they can do. Because if you have 30 kids in a classroom, you are going to yell. You can't help yourself. Well, I've done it. I've been a bad teacher,
an educator,
like everybody else.
Sure.
Too.
Well, we've all had bad days or bad semesters, and then add to that the cell phones in high schools.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's a problem. Look, the best way you want to create a class, have them set up the rules. Tell your kids, get together, come up with the rules. I'm not going to tell you what to do. And if you do that, you're teaching kids many things very quickly because they will start to build a normative community based on their own, their own system. The more we try to, like...
And you don't think they're going to sabotage the best efforts of education in the process?
Oh, sure they will. That's what kids do. But they will actually remember the experience. They will actually recall what they said. You know, John, we have classrooms that are the most forgettable things in the world, and that's not education. So what I'm trying to do is trying to help coach and nurture education administrators to develop memorable experiences that will... push, nudge, and put kids in a place where they'll fit and not quit.
Where do people reach you, Tim Clue?
Well, I think funnyeducator.com.
Funnyeducator.com. That was available. You were able to get that.
Can you believe it? Right?
Actually, I'm surprised.
That's my retirement plan, by the way, just to sell that.
It's going to be worth something. I think it is right now. Funnyeducator.com is where Tim Clue lives, and he and I go way back, and it's always a pleasure.
Thanks, John. This was a blast. This was like a deja vu.
Well put. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's the end of that. We'll pause here.
Well, yop. We got to say yop, don't we?